Talk and Tunes. Broadcasting from unceded Coast Salish territories, this is Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Here's your next hour of commentary and music.
But we just need one night off to apply the good pressure.
I'm in my trash era. My name is Leslie. You're tuned in to Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. I have an exciting show for you today. I chatted with Russell Cheung, who is the president of Chinatown Today. Now, he and I talked about this luxury condo development proposal called 105 Kiefer. You may have heard of it if you are locally located. And he told me all about why it would be ultimately really detrimental to the neighborhood and the community. We talked about having culturally appropriate services for the residents of Chinatown. We talked about the constant, ongoing threat and reality of gentrification in the area. We also chatted a bit about how a big project development like this, if it were to actually center the residents of Chinatown, what that would look like. And of course, ways for you, listener, to learn more and to show up for the residents of Chinatown whose lives are kind of threatened by this proposed development. So stick around for that. Before we get into it, though, here's some music by local talent Yusu Futuro.
Thank you. Welcome back to Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. My name is Leslie. I'm here today with Russell Chung, who is the president of Chinatown Today. We're going to be discussing some, like a recent big issue that has come up in the neighborhood, and also many Vancouverites might want to know more about it. So thank you for joining me, Russell.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Before we get to the meat of the conversation, who are you? Introduce yourself to the listener. What do you do, and what is Chinatown Today?
Yeah, so as you just heard, my name's Russell Chiang. I use he, him pronouns. I'm the president of Chinatown Today. And so we're a nonprofit with the mission of helping share Chinatown's stories. And those are stories past, present, and future. We're generally focused on Vancouver's Chinatown, where we're based, which is on the unceded territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations.
Thank you for that. So one of the one of the big things, obviously, that's been happening around Chinatown right now is this discussion about 105 Kiefer. And your organization has done a lot to raise awareness about it and to sort of rally folks behind, reasons as to why perhaps the development is not a great, does not belong in Chinatown. So maybe before we get into that, what is 105 Kiefer?
Yeah, so 105 Kiefer, it's the address at the corner of Kiefer and Columbia Streets, right in front of the Chinatown Memorial Square. Some people also know that as the Kiefer Triangle. And the Chinatown Memorial Monument, which is at the center of the square, and it honors Chinese Canadian laborers and veterans. It's also right across the street from the Dr. Sun Yat-sen Park, which is the public park adjoining to the Dr. Sun Yat-sen Classical Chinese Garden. And it's also inspired by traditional Chinese gardens and the Chinese Canadian Military Museum as well. And now, so it's owned right now by Beatty, which is a big property developer that, and I believe they own properties all across Canada. They had originally bought 105 Kiefer in 2013 and had put several proposals forward on the site, all of which have been rejected by the community and by the city. And the last round was in 2017. And now the proposal this time around is the same one as in 2017, which is 111 luxury condos towering over the Chinatown Memorial Square and Memorial Monument. This building has no affordable or seniors housing and no safeguards against gentrification. And so the reason why Chinatown Today is getting involved in this and has been involved in this, we were actually involved the fight against 105 Kiefer the first time around, is because the importance of the site, not only in telling the stories of these Chinese Canadian laborers and veterans who fought for our right to vote and built the country and society in which we live, but also because it's a site of making new stories and telling new stories, whether it's mahjong events that were being held in the summer in the square by being held by the Youth Collaborative for Chinatown, other community events as well, and ceremonies, festivals. And so that's it's a site of huge importance for the community, and in order to help safeguard the ability for it to be a site for further storytelling and storying and story making in the future, that's sort of how we've come to get involved with in this fight.
You mentioned earlier that 105 Kiefer, this development has been proposed and shut down over and over again. So mm-hmm. Why is that? So as I understand it, 2017 was the last time that it kind of got overturned. But why are they back?
Yeah, so they're back because actually after 2017, the city had rejected the proposal. Jerry Dubrovolny, who was the city's chief engineer at the time and the one who delivered most of the reasons at the Development Permit Board hearing back in 2017, had mentioned a few different factors that made the proposed development inconsistent with the applicable bylaws and design guidelines. And he had mentioned that these flaws in the design would actually be so drastic and require such drastic changes to the design that it would essentially be a total redesign as opposed to something that's just an accepting of the proposal or application with changes. And so afterwards, after the city had rejected the application, they had offered BD a few different options, including a land swap and a land purchase. BD rejected those and instead went to court to get the decision overturned. They sought judicial review of the development permit board's decision. They're actually unsuccessful, so they failed on all but one of their arguments at court. And the one argument was that the reasons for the decision were not sufficient. And so there's a case in 2019 that sort of outlined the requirements for administrative decision makers, so basically non-elected decision makers in government. And part of that was that that decision was that if a decision maker makes a decision that's quite different from the previous the previous record of decisions, then they should provide reasons. And if they don't provide reasons, then the decision can be handed back down, and so or handed back to the decision maker, because without sufficient reasons, then it's considered unreasonable. And so that's what happened here. So that was the only point on which BD was successful. And so now they're back. They've chosen not to amend their application or withdraw it. And so they're bringing back a 2017 application. It will be decided under the 2017 bylaws and 2017 guidelines, which are a little bit different from what we have now. There's been quite a bit of progress in the city in the intervening years in terms of attitudes towards Chinatown and measures to help protect this valuable neighborhood for the city. But so that's why it's back.
With regards to that, since the proposal was made in 2017 and they're going to be reviewing it again under those 2017 bylaws, what is the reason why they're not reviewing it under the 2023 ones or the more current bylaws?
Yeah, so that's the result of another legal case. So there was basically the current state of law in BC looks like for these kinds of decision makers, if there's an error, if they're found to have an unreasonable decision, then it goes back to the same as if they were making this decision in 2017 or back at the beginning, but if the error, whatever unreasonableness, didn't actually happen. And so in this case, it's considered fair for them, for the city to make the decision under the 2017 rules. And in 2017, they did actually reject it based on the bylaws and policies and guidelines that were in place. But the reasoning in the written decision was actually, I think the written decision didn't quite have much in the way of reasoning. It just mentioned that it was non-compliant with certain bylaws and policies, without going into the same level of detail that Mr. Jerry Bravolny had gone into in the hearing itself, and that had been voiced by quite a few community members, academics, and other experts in their submissions at that time.
Interesting. Okay, thank you for that explanation. Wow. Municipal bylaws are kind of weird. I want to move on a little bit to the kind of like the building itself. You mentioned before that if it were to be developed, it could have a pretty detrimental effect on Chinatown economically, also speaking in terms of like culturally as well. Could you talk a little bit more about that? So how will that development affect Chinatown in those levels?
Yeah, so there's a few ways that this proposal, if, you know, if it were to be developed, would negatively affect Chinatown. And one part is just the fact that it's not an accessible space. So, being 111 luxury condos, you know, with no affordable seniors housing or culturally sensitive or appropriate housing, then that means that this is a building that will not be able to serve as housing for the majority of the community, or not just the majority, but like say 99.9% of Chinatown. And so that's one way that the direct building itself would be a detrimental impact, especially because there is such a need for seniors housing and for culturally appropriate housing in Chinatown. Now there's also impacts beyond the four lines of the lot boundary, and that's really that a building like this would of course tower over the Chinatown Memorial Square and Chinatown Memorial Monument, as well as the Sun Yat-sen Dr. Sun Yat-sen Park and the Chinese Canadian Military Museum. And so, especially with the design choices that that BD has put forward, this would just do irreversible damage to the sense of place and community vibrancy in Chinatown, with you know, having a chilling effect on the streetscape, as we've seen with other luxury condo developments in Chinatown, and of course just towering over and really dwarfing the memorial monument, instead of sort of highlighting it as you know, as a site for honoring the ancestors and our forebears as a community, which is how the monument has really been intended for. In addition to that, a building like this is will worsen will intensify gentrification pressures, and will intensify development pressures on adjacent buildings, whether they're heritage or house legacy businesses, or serve as housing for seniors, low-income folks, or others who are important members of our community. Yeah, so a building like this would it would because it intensifies gentrification and development pressures on other buildings, and because the units in this building would fetch such high prices, of course that drives up rents on neighboring buildings, and can cause people to be evicted or just to leave when these rent increases get too high to bear. And so what that has the effect of doing is basically sucking the life out of our streetscape and out of our community. We've already learned the hard way from developments like 188 Kiefer, 189 Kiefer, Blue Sky, which is next door on Main, as well as there's a building on the 700 block of Main Street, and a few other large luxury condos in Chinatown, that these large-scale developments, far from bringing body heat that can help revitalize the community, sort of have a chilling effect on the streetscape and worsen gentrification pressures on the community, which they promised to help. We've already seen this play out here in Vancouver, but this is the same thing that's happened in Seattle, Portland, Montreal, Los Angeles, and elsewhere. We've seen that the residents of these new buildings don't are often not the ones that are not people that will be going to frequent or support legacy businesses, or helping support the services that many existing community members, elders, and seniors desperately need. And so that's despite the fact that you might see an increase in density or an increase in population, the fact is that this kind of development doesn't actually serve the needs of the community, and often worsens the pressures and crises that we're already facing.
That is definitely a fair concern. Thank you for that. The one thing that comes to mind to me is that I think quite recently there were seven organizations, local organizations in Chinatown that signed an open letter to voice their support for 105 Kiefer. One of those people being, I believe, Jordan Ng, who is the president of Chinatown Business Innovation Association. And one thing that they claim is that no displacement is going to happen, partly because in their view nobody has lived in that lot. So, but as you have pointed out, the threat of gentrification is very real, as we've seen in many other Chinatowns across what we call North America. So what is kind of like the logic behind their argument that nobody could be, nobody is under the threat of displacement, as we know what gentrification looks like in many other Chinatowns and is an active threat in our Vancouver Chinatown as well.
Yeah, so there's a little bit of a difference between displacement and gentrification. And so displacement is often happens when you don't have when say someone buys an existing building that already serves as housing and starts to jack up the rents or starts evicting people. And so those residents are displaced, or I guess actively displaced. You also have gentrification, which is the which is similarly or similar and related, but can occur even when no active displacement is happening. For example, here where the 105 Kiefer, I believe it was a gas station for a number of years, owned by the Lee brothers, who I believe one of whom was a veteran as well. But he, so this lot, of course, right now is not being used for housing, but even so, the fact that this development is going up worsens pressures, whether it's development pressures, rental pressures on neighboring buildings, even buildings that aren't right next to it, but elsewhere within the HA1A zone, as well as within Chinatown and neighboring communities like Strathcona as well. And so so even where no existing housing is being displaced, or existing residents are being actively displaced, there still can be ways that people are driven out, whether it's through rental increases or, especially in the case of these new developments, is that they end up often, because of the exorbitant rents in on the ground floor in retail spaces, cannot serve as home for legacy businesses or businesses that are accessible to low-income seniors and other long-time residents of Chinatown. And so, when these kinds of buildings come in and create those changes in the streetscape, make them far less inviting or to long-time residents who then have to go further and further afield, then they may feel that they're being pushed out of the community anyways, even if there isn't an effect on their specific housing units. And the other thing that we often forget when developers try to impose these kinds of projects on our communities is that it isn't just the fact that this condo development doesn't serve any of our needs. It's also the fact that a building like this going up forecloses the possibility of having anything better on the site for the foreseeable future, or at least for the lifetime of a building, right? We've seen that our neighbors in Hogan's Alley have been reemerging and resurging after over 50 years, but who knows how long it would take if we let Chinatown go today.
Definitely, I definitely see where you're coming from with that, and thank you for the clarification between the difference between displacement and gentrification. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. I'm Leslie. I'm talking with Russell Chung, who is the president of Chinatown Today, an organization that aims to tell the stories of Chinatown. They're doing a lot of campaigning and work around bringing awareness to a development. made by BD Living. And it's colloquially known as 105 Kiefer. We're talking about that right now. Russell, one of the things that you kind of mentioned was this idea of, actually, before I go into that, I do have to say regarding the aesthetics of the building, because you mentioned that as well. I did see the kind of like the model, the render that Trinitown Today put up on your website. And I have to agree, it looks bad. It looks horrifying. It doesn't look very welcoming. And at the same time, it kind of, you know, it really stands out in like a, not a very good way with the rest of the surroundings of Chinatown. I have to kind of commend you guys for putting that together. I love a miniature, but that was kind of horrifying to look at. So yeah, it was an experience. But before, earlier you were mentioning this idea of like foot traffic coming into Chinatown if the development does go through. And certainly on the other side, there's a big point of discussion from the other side. The proponents of the project rally behind, which is this idea that 105 Kiefer could refresh Chinatown. And one of the terms that they tend to use is to revitalize. I've certainly heard that from, you know, not just like the organizations and businesses, but I've also heard like your everyday Chinese Canadians in Vancouver say that these developments could revitalize Chinatown. But what does that actually, what do they mean by this? And what does that actually look like?
Yeah, so I think that term revitalize, you know, it sort of gives this idea of, you know, bringing back life to the community. Of course, sort of ignoring the fact that there are people who have still, you know, have continued to live and continued to hold space and make space in Chinatown for cultural expression, for celebration, and to live other aspects of their lives. And so, but this idea of revitalization really has to do with, you know, bringing more people in to help, you know, increase foot traffic, help businesses that are struggling. Of course, we've seen and we've learned the hard way that these kinds of buildings don't necessarily do that. So, for example, as I mentioned, this 188 Kiefer, this blue sky next door on Main 189 Kiefer across the street as well, 700 block on Main Street. There's a few of these that, of course, you know, they are quite tall. They do, there are a lot of people living in them, but unfortunately, you know, a lot of these new residents don't support local Chinatown businesses, instead preferring to shop elsewhere, whether it's further downtown or at, you know, new gentrifying businesses that don't necessarily fall within an accessible price range for existing residents or the existing community, or are also language inaccessible as well, which many of them are. And so despite the fact that these, you know, these buildings have people coming in, they don't actually bring body heat to the sidewalk or to the streets. Of course, I think we all look back and see, or look at, for those of us who, like myself, who weren't alive at the time, we look at photos from maybe in the archives or family photos from the 1970s that just show just how bustling the street was in Chinatown around that time. But and of course wish that Chinatown could be something like that today. But how we achieve that and how that is and where we are when we do achieve that are things that definitely are worth considering. In addition to the issues with I guess you could say the new residents in these kinds of luxury condo buildings, you can also think about the businesses that they house on the ground floor.